Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I want to bring into the show the man who has been so kind with his time during this pandemic that we've been dealing with. He's been joining us on the show every single week since this has started. And, you know, he knows how much I appreciate him being with us each week. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern University's Central DuPage Hospital. Dr. Most, good morning, my friend, and how are you?
Good morning, Dean. I'm doing great. Kind of nice to see a little blue sky and some sunlight today after the dreary day we had yesterday.
I wasn't sure what that bright thing was in the sky at first. Yeah. I had to Google a bright thing in the sky to see, just to remind myself what that was. And it seems like, I wouldn't exactly say that we've turned the corner with the pandemic, but it's in my untrained eye, it seems like, you know, maybe things are getting a little better. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you know, it's there's been some encouraging news, I'll say. You know, we are still seeing slight increases. When I say slight, very slight, but we haven't seen decreases yet. So we're still kind of on this upward trend, but it has really slowed dramatically. And that's exactly what we expect to see as we, you know, we talk about bending this curve. We know that we're going to decrease the peak, but we're going to increase the length of time that cases will be here. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now.
When we're looking at this long term, I mean, the governor has, laid out some things that people may be able to do at certain times. Does everything sort of seem on target from what you're hearing, from what Governor Pritzker and the mayor are, saying that they're seeing as our timeline?
Yeah, you know, I think that the timeline that they're looking at right now and what they've done is in such stark contrast to, you know, what they did in Georgia. I think we're going to show that Illinois is much more on top of this than some of these other states. Extending the 30 days or through the month of May, I think was really important. I think if we didn't, we would have seen another big spike in June. So that makes sense. And some of the industries that he's going to let open are definitely going to be able to be protected from a social distancing point of view, but also get people outside and allow them to do some things which will help their anxiety as well as just their mental health.
Yeah, you're the first person that I thought of when I heard him say that people would be able to go golfing soon. I know I'm not going to be able to find you once those golf courses are open. I'm not going to be able to find Dr. Most anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I appreciated that he did it, and I think it's good, again, for not just for me, but I think a lot of people want to get out, want to get a little exercise besides just walking, and it's a game that you can social distance very easily, to be honest with you, and it makes it, it gives us something to look forward to. So
right.
I was appreciative that he did it.
Right. And a fair amount of exercise as well at the same time, which isn't, such a bad thing. If anyone has questions for Dr. Most, let me just invite you to our phone lines right now, 312-981-7200, and we'll try to answer questions as best we can. 312-981-7200. I guess the big medical issue that's come up this week was the statement about the possibility of someone ingesting disinfectant as a way of getting rid of the virus. Medical people have, all commented on how exactly dangerous that was. I was searching around about that this morning. Do you know that there was an ad, like a newspaper ad, Kevin, in the 1930s, encouraging people to use Lysol to clean parts of their body internally? That, crazy 1930s, somewhat kind of dangerous kinds of things that they were using to sell the product back in the day.
Wow. And I'm sure the product has changed from 1930s till now, so I don't know what was in that product in the 30s, but still, We need to make sure that if we're going to make a comment about something that we should try to do, that we at least know that there's some science behind it and that it's not going to put people at risk. You know, in the last 48 hours, you've seen a lot more calls to poison control about individuals who have tried to gargle with bleach and have done other things. And we just have to be very careful about what we say to the public in a forum like he had that day.
It's amazing. I mean, maybe it's not so amazing to you because you're a doctor and, you know, maybe you see this kind of thing every day, but it just seems amazing to me that anybody would think that gargling with bleach is a good idea in any way. But I guess you probably have seen stranger things come through your offices.
Absolutely. We see stranger things every day. The part that was a little disappointing to me is when he made the comment, he looked to the doctors and said, you know, and we're working on this, or we're going to test this, or we're going to, that was kind of an affirmation to the public that the scientists that everybody trusts now, Dr. Bryant and Dr. Brix and Dr. Fauci, that Trump said it and it was almost like, oh, okay, yeah, they must be working on that. Therefore, if they're working on it, it must be safe and therefore I can try it. And unfortunately, that's not the case.
I read a story this week that said that pharmacies would soon be able to administer the test for COVID-19. Is that a good idea? Is that a safe and efficient way to do this?
Yeah, you know, if as long as the pharmacist is taught how to collect the sample, and it's going to give us an opportunity to test more people. I think, you know, it used to be that if you did a Google search on the words COVID, you got probably the biggest hit. Now, if you did a Google search on the word test, you'd probably get a bigger hit. So until we figure out a testing strategy, and pharmacies may be a great strategy, I think we need to really figure out what our strategy is with testing before we continue to just, I hate to say, just go out and do testing randomly, which it feels like we're doing right now.
A caller on the phone line is asking a question. My pharmacy advised me against getting a second shingles vaccine because of COVID-19, but my 6 months are up in early June. What should I do?
Yeah, I mean, if you're asymptomatic, then there's no reason why you're going to wait to get that. You know, I would, it's interesting that they thought that unless the individual had symptoms and thought that they may have had COVID, the rest of the small minority of people that actually have it, you know, whether you're going to listen and say 15% or 20%, that means 80% don't. We have to make sure that we're not stopping other healthcare during that time. We're still giving children immunizations. We're still making sure that we're doing things that are right. So unless the individual had symptoms and they were concerned that they were fighting off COVID at the time, there's no reason why you would not give another vaccine.
Yeah, and it seems like people are, I don't know if people are getting elective surgery yet, but it seems like people feel a little more comfortable going to an emergency room if something happens, going to their doctor's office if something happens. Is it's safe to do that?
Yes. Matter of fact, you know, the governor now has allowed us to start preparing to start elective surgeries as of May 11th, which is great because all these surgeries that have been postponed for the past 4-6 weeks, and we postponed only ones that we felt were safe to postpone. In other words, it would not change the immediate health of the individual if they were to wait 4-6 weeks. Fortunately, unfortunately, some of those change and we had to do those. But right now, we have people that haven't had cancer surgery because they've been waiting. We need to make sure that we get across the point that hospitals are probably the safest place you can be, for one. And two, your continued health is very important over this period of time, that we shouldn't be putting off things that we have for the past 4 to 6 weeks. So really important that people understand that their health is very important and that we can't be totally afraid of this, and we still need to be concerned about our day-to-day health.
Donna is on the phone at 312-981-7200. Hi, you're on WGN.
Thank you. Mayo Clinic is running a trial on platelets that have been with the antibodies for very sick patients. And I was wondering if this is helping very sick patients, why couldn't we take the platelet-rich antibody-enhanced platelets and use them for the doctors and nurses who are the front line, first line healthcare providers, so that they're not at risk that they would have the antibodies in their blood to fight the disease before they even got it.
So Donna, a couple of points there, and you ask a good question. So what we're talking about is plasma-rich
antibody-rich platelets.
Yeah, not platelets, but plasma. Platelets clot blood, right. But plasma is the part that separates. And we know that individuals who have had COVID and have survived have those antibodies. Antibodies are important to fight infection versus prevent infection. So the period of time that they are going to be there is more important right now that we use to treat the infected people. We certainly need to protect all the caregivers, and may we in the future need to use something like that? Very possible. But right now, we're trying to save lives, and if we give all the healthcare workers the appropriate PPE, protective equipment, then we're protecting them. Let's try to save as many lives as we can. Mayo Clinic is doing that study. It's also going to be done here in Chicago with Northwestern as well as University of Chicago. So that study should be up and running in Chicago very soon, probably next week.
Great. Good to know. Thank you.
Diane at 312-981-7200.
Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Dr. Moss.
Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
Hi. My mother fell yesterday. She lives in Wheaton. She called the ambulance to take her to Central DuPage, which she lives real close to, and they told her they would prefer not to take her because the hospital was filled with COVID, and if she had someone to drive her, they could take her over to an immediate care center over in Donata. So I heard you say the safest place to be right now is a hospital. The Wheaton Fire Department basically told my mom it's not smart to take you there. We're not taking you.
Diane, that's very disturbing for a couple of reasons. One, if she needed care in a hospital, they should go to any hospital. We have not turned away any emergencies. We have not turned away any ambulance. And it's very discouraging that Wheaton would even consider saying that. Now, if it was just something minor
and
didn't need to be in the I will follow up. I know the Wheaton Fire Chief. I will definitely follow up on that because that's inappropriate. Keeping people out of the emergency room that don't need to be there is one thing, but people who need to be in an emergency room, there's no reason. Every hospital has COVID right now. I hate to say it, but every hospital is treating patients with COVID. So if we're going to say don't go to hospitals, that's inappropriate.
Yeah, they basically said if you can get someone to drive you, go over to this Northwestern Immediate Care in Donata. We did, and she had a broken clavicle. But the fire department or ambulance basically said that's not where you want to be right now. So I just, I heard you say that's the safest place to be, and they wouldn't take her.
All right, well, we'll do some more investigation about that because, as Kevin said, that has not been the case with him. Kevin, what about you say that all hospitals have COVID-19 right now, not only patients but healthcare workers as well. A tipster sent a note to WGN-TV talking about at a very well-known, huge Chicago hospital saying that a huge number of healthcare workers were tested positive for COVID, went into isolation, and once the symptoms subsided, were put back to work again. Is that safe?
Well, yes. As long as we know that they're not shedding the virus, and as long as we know that they've cleared the virus, then they're welcome. They can come back to work. We have a very tight surveillance monitoring on all those patients or all those individuals. Anybody who is exposed to that, whether they were exposed in the hospital or at home, we have corporate health physicians that follow up with them daily on their symptoms, and then we test them. So bringing them back into the workforce is appropriate as long as they're no longer shedding the virus and that they've been healed. They would have to come back at some time, and some of these people are very important in the healthcare of others.
What about the startlingly high statistics of COVID-19 in nursing homes? I know it's because people are older there. I know it's because people have other outlying conditions as well. But is there something that nursing homes could be doing that may not be happening to bring some of those numbers down?
Well, I think now, you know, that it's been as public as it has, you start to see a lot of nursing homes change a lot of what they're doing. You know, a lot of nursing homes would congregate everybody for a meal because they wanted to have more social activities. They would put individuals in rooms to allow them to socially interact so that they weren't isolated. I think that physicians and hospitals and nurses, when we know we're treating an infectious disease, that we're much more protective, wearing protective equipment, something that the nursing homes probably didn't have enough of or weren't aware that they had asymptomatic people. Once they found out they have somebody, then they really worked quickly to at least get COVID units and stop some of the social interaction that allowed this to spread. But nursing homes are definitely, like you said, vulnerable population, older population, almost all of them have comorbidities. So that's the population that we're the most concerned about.
John is in St. Charles, 312-981-7200. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Dean. Good morning, Dr. Most.
Question. Good morning.
How do we keep people, how do we, these testing areas keep people from coming back every 2 to 3 weeks every time they have a cough or a sniffle?
Yeah, John, it's interesting. We're walking right into allergy season right now. Trees, pollen is sky high. We're going to start to see more people with colds and coughs and sniffles. And a negative test at one testing site gives you a negative test for that snapshot. You could go out and get exposed later. So that's probably one of our biggest concerns and about how we're using testing, and that we really need to have a more organized structure to how we're going to test and what we're going to do. This is just my personal opinion, but you know, we're doing a lot of this piecemeal testing in outlet malls and here and there. Really, we should focus the testing on whoever's coming into the hospital and needs to be placed in the hospital or in a nursing home. And while we're doing that,
Aurora has like a 2-hour wait just for testing, you know?
Yep. So, John, if you went to there and you got tested and you were negative, that's great news for you for that minute. If you went there and got tested and you were positive, then now what we need to do is not only quarantine you and isolate you, but also go back and do all the people that you've been in contact with since you've had symptoms. I don't think we're doing a good job of that. So we're identifying the individual, but the goal of any testing would be to identify the individual and then go back and say, these are individuals that may also need to be isolated because they were exposed to someone who was positive. But we're not there yet.
Thanks, John, for your call. Appreciate your call. Mark, you're in Rockford and on WGN.
Hello, doctor. I have two questions. Does the virus basically settle in the bronchi and then do nosocomial infections, in a sense, take over if you're on a vent that go into the alveoli, such as bacterias? And my second question is it a good idea to, in a sense, when you're just walking or whatever, to enforce deep breathing, diaphragmatic-type breathing, and coughing to, in a sense, expel a virus if it's in you?
Yeah, and if you could translate some of that stuff into regular person talk so we all understand, that would be great.
Sure. So the initial question is, where does the infection mainly lie? And
right.
Once we, you know, is it, and the weird thing about this virus is it appears to go in more than one place. In other words, it's in the back, it's in the throat, the pharynx, it goes into the bronchioles, and it goes into the deep lungs, into the alveolar sacs. So it can go anywhere there, and it really is based on how good your immune system is to see if you can fight it off to a point where it's just in your throat and it doesn't get too advanced. That's probably the first question.
Yeah.
Your second question again, I'm sorry, was?
Well, if you, in a sense, diaphragmic breathing, if you deep breathe and then expel, your oxygen or the CO2, I'm sorry, does that, in a sense, can that eliminate a virus or other things inside of your lung situation.
That's similar to what people do after they have a surgical procedure, right? That very
Yeah. Or even just heavy exercise and expelled coughing with a spirometer, whatever.
Does that help at all?
So the reason we use spirometry after surgery is to make sure that the lungs don't collapse to allow bacteria and viruses to settle in there. We want you to make sure that you're expanding your lungs as much as you can. Now, when you're coughing and expelling the virus, are you expelling it? Absolutely you are, which unfortunately allows it to spread. Can you expel it to a point where you say, you know what, I have 100 viruses in my throat. If I cough hard enough, all 100 are going to be out? No. So you will continue to spread that virus, but unfortunately, they're going to be in the back of your throat or in your lungs, and they're just going to remultiply. But, you know, so until your body has that antibody response to fight them off, or until we find a medication that can fight them off, unfortunately, just simple coughing is not going to eliminate the illness.
And one more, could you possibly explain how some of these people between 20 and 40 end up with strokes, and they're saying that this is caused from the virus, but I mean strokes?
Yeah, Mark. So one of the concerns that we have right now is that we're finding that some individuals will have clotting problems with this illness as well. So now, if someone is diagnosed as positive, we actually start them on blood thinners to make sure that they don't potentially have those strokes. So it's something that we wish we would have heard more out of China, because as we find individuals now who are positive, we're going to start to put them on blood thinners to stop the ability to have either a pulmonary embolism or potentially a stroke.
Yeah, there was thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you, Mark, for your call. There was a soap opera actor, Kevin, who is, I would guess, maybe in his early 30s, tested positive for corona, did develop a clotting, and had to have a leg amputated as a result, apparently, of exactly what you're talking about with the clotting, right?
Yeah. So we, you know, normally with infections, we're looking at your white blood cell count, and we're looking at other tests, especially in COVID, you know, how are your liver going? But now we're finding out there's a test called the D-dimer, which shows us how much clotting you are doing. And now we're really monitoring that very closely. We're starting people on drugs like Lovenox, which is a blood thinner, immediately. And then if that number starts to increase, we're increasing that dose of Lovenox to a point where they're fully anticoagulated. So we want to make sure that we don't allow this illness to cause strokes, pulmonary embolisms, blood clots in the legs or blood clots in the arm that cause significant damage and loss of limb, unfortunately, in that case.
312-981-7200. Phil from Indiana, you're on WGN.
Hi there. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question for the doctor. I've heard a number of times that two of the big things about the antibodies that a person might develop from COVID is whether or not he is immune to it after he has the disease. And if he's immune, how long would he be immune? And they say that this is important for figuring out strategies for easing up social restrictions.
Joel, it's a question that we've struggled with for a long time. And the reason is because of the immaturity of this, that we don't even know it's full season yet. Now, the discouraging news, and it's discouraging but yet not verified, is that individuals in China who had coronavirus, had antibodies, have now tested positive for having coronavirus again. So we can form antibodies, and we just hope that those antibodies will give us immunity. We don't know that. Just because you have antibodies does not give you immunity. The big thing that that's going to play out is how will a vaccine come into play? So we've tried to make vaccines for coronaviruses for a long time. There's seven different coronaviruses. Four of them cause the common cold. We know that you fight off a common cold and have antibodies, but you don't get immunity. In other words, you can get another common cold 6 months later, 8 months later. We're afraid that that may have happened or may be happening now. And if that's the case, will our vaccine be not a one-time vaccine, but more like an influenza vaccine where we're going to need it every year? That is what time is going to tell. And really, that's the big study right now is, does a presence of antibody actually give you immunity or just show you that you were, that at one time you had this illness?
How exactly is it determined if a person is immune?
you're going to see that, unfortunately, you're going to see, do they get illness again after being exposed to illness?
Mm-hmm.
So they've had it, they have antibodies, and they get the illness back.
So that would be a purposeful kind of a lab setting.
Yeah, you know, you kind of hope that that doesn't get to that point, but it actually may. They may try it in primates first to see if that gets any immunity. I think before we got to that point, we are going to be back into the fall season where we expect to see this again, and we'll start to see anecdotal stories of someone who tested positive, had antibodies, and still yet got the illness again. This illness has such a spectrum of symptoms, from no symptoms at all with individuals to individuals who are obviously, you know, deathly ill. So the immune response is different in each individual person, but we would hope that our hope is still that we do get some immunity. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, that's the insidious thing about this, is that there's so much that we just don't know yet. Thank you for the call, Phil.
Okay.
And we'll get one more in here from Ron in Tinley Park. You're on WGN.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I want to mention that I think we're so fortunate that WGN has a doctor most available to do this. His information is fantastic. Thank you for doing this. I'm a senior citizen, and I've been to the grocery store once. I like my fresh fruits and vegetables, but I'm leery about buying them. Should I be, and how do I deal with buying fresh fruits and vegetables?
Yeah, Ron, we really haven't seen that the virus lives on fresh fruits and vegetables much. So really, you should still be able to go and do that. And I tell people that are even anxious a little bit, make sure you just clean them properly. You know, you don't even need soap and water, just to really wash them off. Individuals who are still even more concerned, I say go ahead and leave them sit for a day or two, because the virus won't live outside of a body for longer than that on the surface. So that would be one way. And then the other way that I would, if you're really concerned, is instead of going with fresh fruits and vegetables, go ahead and get the frozen fruits and vegetables right now and use those. But really important that you keep that up. As a senior, we want to make sure that you're getting the vitamins that you need, and to get them naturally through fruits and vegetables is so important. So you're doing the right thing. You're getting the fiber, you're getting the vitamins, and as long as you wash them properly and use them properly, and a lot of fruits and vegetables, we are taking the cover off the fruit or vegetable before we eat it. So then just wash your hands, and you know that the inside of it is protected.
What about putting something in the refrigerator? Does that also kill the virus if you leave it in the refrigerator for a couple of days? Or does it, you know, just sort of put it in a state of limbo until you take it out of the refrigerator?
No, you know, we haven't really seen that. We've seen, you know, how long it will live on surfaces. So it certainly is not going to be one that's going to be in you know, if we put it in the refrigerator, it's going to live longer. We know that heat and humidity actually make it live shorter, but we don't know that refrigeration is going to make it live longer. And really, we're talking, if you buy fruits and vegetables today on a Sunday and you say, you know what, I'm not going to use them until Wednesday, and you wash them, your chance of getting it is so low that it's much higher than you would have just by going to the grocery store.
Ron, thanks for the call. I made a tray last night of roasted vegetables. I had some squash and eggplant and carrots and red peppers. Just what was in my fridge. It's like, I'm going to roast all of these and I'll figure out something to do with them. But, you know, certainly the roasting process would end any potential of damage or, you know, a virus. And pretty sure it's going to be delicious, whatever I wind up doing with it.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, when we look at fruits, we don't cook too many fruits except apple pies and cherry pies and things along those lines. We usually eat fruits that are raw, whereas the vegetables, we're often cooking them, although we do eat a lot of raw vegetables as well. But any of those vegetables that you cooked, that's great as well. And roasting bean is so much better than boiling. So, you know, roast your broccoli versus boil your broccoli. You lose a lot of the vitamins in the boiling process. So you did absolutely right, and I'm sure they'll be great.
Yeah, and the roasting, I'll just throw in, much more delicious than the boiling or steaming as well. Kevin, thank you, as always, for spending some time with us. We always appreciate it. Dr. Kevin Most is Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern University's Central DuPage Hospital. Enjoy your Sunday, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you.
You got it, Dean. Take care.